Praise Yahweh. We're here in a warm place. Again, it's pretty cold out there, and I'm amazed at how much snow is falling. And today is the 26th of March. It's usually fairly warm by now. But this is the weather that we're given, so we'll be glad in it. I'd like to talk to you today about the New Testament Passover and examining the details of the Passover found in the New Testament. And there's a number of things that we can look at today. There's a number of things that we can examine the details of. But there's a lot that we will not be able to get to today. And I don't plan to go into a part two on this. But, you know, maybe, you know, if Yahweh wills, if that's his will, then maybe we will do that. But there is quite a bit to cover. And one thing that we need to understand is that some of the words and some of the placement of words in Scripture are, you know, questionable. And we have to look at the original wording. We have to look in interlinears. We have to look in Strong's. And sometimes Strong's doesn't give us all that we need. So we search, we dig, we look for the details, and we want to make things congeal in our mind so that we have a proper understanding of doing Yahweh's will, because much of his will is also found in the New Testament. In Mark 14, 1 through 2, we find, "Now the Passover and unleavened bread were 2 days away, and the chief priests and the scribes were seeking how to seize him by stealth and to kill him. For they were saying, not during the festival, otherwise there might be a riot of the people." And of course, we find the festival of the Jews was the keeping of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, but they kept it at a wrong time. It's interesting that the author makes a separation here of Passover and, or in addition to, also days of unleavened bread. He's making a distinction, but understanding what the Jews were saying among themselves because of their own belief, they had that. So we see the author describing accurately the distinction between the Passover, and the word "and" there is ka'i or ka'i. It's Strong's 2532, meaning "and" or "also," the days of unleavened bread there. Now, while there is a distinction between the Passover that Yahshua and the disciples kept compared to what the Pharisees did, sometimes the translators of the Bible make it difficult to figure it out. For example, Yahshua's words, as described by the King James Version in Matthew 26 and verse 2, we read, "Ye know that after 2 days is the feast of the Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be crucified." Now, the New American Standard Bible says, Matthew 26, 2, "You know that after 2 days the Passover is coming, and the Son of Man is to be handed over for crucifixion." Now, even while the New American Standard Bible may translate this verse a little bit better, it could still use some help by eliminating the word crucifixion. It shouldn't be there. When we look at a word study, both in the Old and New Testament, it's a better word there would be impalement or a nailing to the tree. But we don't have time to go into word study today, but both the Old Testament and the New Testament word study confirms that he was nailed to a tree, not a cross. So even with a better translation, we can see problems. Let's go to Matthew 26 and verse 17. "Now on the first day of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Yahshua and asked, 'Where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover?'" Now the day here, you see, first day, day was added, and first is Strong's number 4413, and the word is protos, and basically means former or foremost, previous, these type of things. So a better rendering of Matthew 26:17 might be, "Now, you know, before the days of unleavened bread, or before the unleavened bread, the disciples came to Yahshua." So it would have been sometime before, not just immediately before, but sometime before. There's a number of things that we need to understand, such as wording like the preparation day. What does that mean exactly? John 19, verse 14. Now it was the day of preparation for the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." So what's being said here? Well, this says the day of preparation for the Passover, but it is understood when compared with other scriptures that it is speaking of the Jews' Passover at their timing. They had the tradition of keeping the Passover in the afternoon of the 14th, which led into the 15th. So their Passover was actually going into the first high day of unleavened bread. Now it says the sixth hour here and is understood to mean about noontime. And I've got a chart here, basically Roman time and Hebrew time, and the Hebrew time basically goes something like this. 7 a.m. would be the first hour, 8 a.m. would be second hour, and so on and so forth. And it starts to repeat itself, but with 7 p.m., it's about the first hour, 8 p.m., about the second hour. And I say about because basically this is going with the idea of light and darkness, and it's just the way that it's been brought over to us. But in John 19 and verse 31, it says, "Then the Jews, because it was the day of preparation, so that the bodies would not remain on the stake on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day, asked Pilate that their legs might be broken and that they might be taken away." So we're given insight here. We're given the definition, just like, you know, what is the transgression of Yahweh's, or what is the transgression, or what is sin, I should say? It's the transgression of Yahweh's law. We basically find that found in 1 John 3 and verse 4. So we find a definition. We also find a definition here of what the day of preparation is. And it's critical because it really helps to define and clarify a number of things in the New Testament concerning the timing and what we're looking at when it speaks of Sabbaths, for example. There can be a number of scriptures. In fact, I think we'll go ahead and take a look at one where Sabbath is mentioned once and it's mentioned again within a very short time span. And basically it's talking about the high day and then the weekly Sabbath. But in John 14 and verse 42, we find, "Therefore, because of the Jewish day of preparation, since the tomb was nearby, they laid Yahshua there." And of course, we find that by this time, Yahshua had already been killed, and they ended up putting him in the tomb before sunset on what we would call Wednesday afternoon. Now, while there is an Old Testament prophecy that appears showing that Yahshua would die in the midst of the week, which would be Wednesday, as we would call it, there are also about 40 other prophecies, believe it or not, concerning Yahshua being killed at that time period during the Passover. And of course, it's Passover day, and it's Passover in the afternoon. And that, as we've talked about previously, fits in with the cutting of the covenant that was done in Genesis chapter 15. And it's called a melodactory vow or cutting of the covenant, as I understand. Now, we can see from the New Testament the timing of his death and resurrection. We can actually do it from the four evangels. So we don't need to just rely on Old Testament prophecy. We can actually go to the New Testament and look at the parallel accounts and actually get a fair understanding, a good understanding of the timing. In fact, we see some parallel accounts with him showing a Saturday, Sunday, and a Sunday night. We see this in the book of Matthew. Now, we're not going to go over this in detail, but you might just write these down. Matthew 28, 1 through 20, which would be a parallel to another book such as Mark 16, figure verse 1 through 18 there, and then also the book of Luke, Luke chapter 24 rather, and going from 1 all the way through book to verse 53. And that's really quite a difficult book to get a grasp of as far as the timing goes. And these are my own notes, and I'm not saying it absolutely has to be like this, but I think it's a fair and a good, I don't even want to say guess, I think it's based upon the evidence, what we see in the other parallel passages, it's accurate. We also have the book of John, here, verses 1 through 25. And so that's a little easier to discern there. But we can see basically the Saturday night, Sunday, and then Sunday night. And we're going to get into a little bit of how we see that is so. So let's look at Luke just to get some bearings on these parallel accounts. Just prior to chapter 24, we'll back up to Luke 23 and verses 54 through 56. It says, "It was the preparation day." Here's that word, the preparation day. "And the Sabbath was about to begin. Now the woman who had come with him out of Galilee followed and saw the tomb and how his body was laid. Then they returned and prepared spices and perfumes, and on the Sabbath they rested according to the commandment." So at this point they weren't thinking, well, you know, Yahshua gave up his life, we can do whatever we want. No, they're still keeping the commandment, which was to rest on the seventh day, the Sabbath. Now we'll look at this. The first Sabbath mentioned is actually a high Sabbath. So they're keeping according to the biblical holy day of the high Sabbath, of the Feast of Feast of Unleavened Bread, which we see going in into Thursday. So as we look at this, the first Sabbath mentioned is a high Sabbath and is said to be about to begin. So this is late on Wednesday going into the beginning of Thursday, which comes with the sunset. As we've already looked at in the past, you know, biblical day is from sunset to sunset. Now verse 40, or 56 rather, says they returned home, and they prepared spices and perfumes, which they actually had to purchase. And we find evidence for that in Mark 16:1. But they purchased it on what we would call Friday. There wouldn't have been time to purchase it going into the first high day, and they kept the command, so they wouldn't have worked on that day. And there's also a coming Sabbath after it, so they won't work on that either. But Mark 16, 1 through 4, we read, "When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, bought spices so that they might come and anoint him. Very early on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb when the sun had risen. They were saying to one another, 'Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance of the tomb?' Looking up, they saw that the stone had been rolled away, although it was extremely large." Now, we might ask, you know, what Sabbath is this? Well, backing up, we can confirm it is the weekly seventh day Sabbath, because previous to this, the high Sabbath is spoken of in Mark 15 and verse 42. "When evening had already come, because it was a preparation day," that is the day before the Sabbath. So with both the high Sabbath and the weekly Sabbath identified, when we see Mark 16:6, we know that he had to have risen before the seventh, or just before the seventh day Sabbath was over. Mark 16:6, "And he said to them, 'Do not be amazed. You are looking for Yahshua the Nazarene, who has been impaled. He has," in other words, past tense, He's already risen. He is not here. Behold, he is in the place where they laid him. Now, looking at this and other parallel accounts, we see the sign of Jonah, that is 3 days and three nights. And when we take a look at that, it's a literal statement. There's 3 days and three nights. And, of course, even Yahshua said, aren't there 12 hours in a day? Well, when we look at the timing, when we add up the numbers, when we add up the hours, we have 72 hours. And it's clear that it's 3 days, three daylight hours, 12 hours, and three nighttime hours, 12 hours each. And you can do the math, it's 72 hours. Now, what doesn't work is 36 hours, and as is commonly taught among most believers in the Messiah. Something else that doesn't work, which we've already talked about in previous messages, is the killing of lamb for Passover, or even a fellowship meal to commemorate the Messiah's death. If you would, turn to 1 Corinthians 5, 6 through 8. It says, your boasting is not good. Of course, Paul is addressing those at Corinth. They had a number of issues, problems. We're to learn about those and learn not to imitate them. That says your boasting is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens a whole lump of dough? Clean out the old leaven so that you may be a new lump, just as you are, in fact, unleavened. For Messiah, our Passover, also has been sacrificed. Therefore, let us celebrate the feast not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Now, this does appear to be talking about the days of unleavened bread. But it's interesting that Paul brings up the idea, or brings up the fact, that the Messiah is our Passover. And we see with this, in other areas of New Testament Scripture, no less than three witnesses to the fact that we are not to be eating a Passover lamb. Paul points out to those at Corinth, and by extension to us, one, our Passover has been sacrificed. It's already been done. We don't need to sacrifice. Number two, in the night in which he was betrayed. Which night was that? It's the Passover night. The emblems are emphasized in 1 Corinthians 11, 24 through 25 there. Number four, eat this bread and drink this cup. Proclaim the master's death. We're to proclaim the death. Verse 5, if anyone is hungry, let him eat at home. That's found in 1 Corinthians 11, 34. Now, 1 Corinthians 11, 23 through 26 reads, for I received from the Master that which I also delivered to you, that Master Yahshua, in the night in which he was betrayed, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, this is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, he took the cup also after supper, saying, the cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the master's death until he comes. So attached to the title of the message today is the idea that we must examine the details. And in doing so, it opens up the truth of Yahweh's word and gives clarity on what we are to do as a new covenant body of believers in Messiah. While many things are the same for us, there are still differences under the Melchizedek order. I should just also reiterate from a previous message that the emblems of grape juice and unleavened bread may only be partaken of by baptized brethren in the body of Messiah. Very important. Though others may attend and observe, we don't allow non-baptized brethren to partake of these emblems, be bringing damnation onto them, and I think onto us as well if we allowed it. Paul speaks about such things. Now, besides the New Testament emblems instituted during Passover, we also find that during Passover, the foot washing is to be done among brethren. John 13, and starting in verse 2 through 5, during supper, the devil having already put in the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him, Yahshua, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that had come forth from Yahweh, and he was going back to Yahweh, got up from supper, laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself. Then he poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel in which he was girded. And, of course, we do this in remembrance, in basically being obedient to the Master's words. And he's not telling us these things and implementing these things so that we ignore them. We do them, and we learn lessons from them, and we are blessed by doing so. And, you know, it's a memorial service. It's not something like a festivity to gather and have lots of fun and you know, eat and be merry and, you know, these type of things. It's a very somber time. In John 13, in verse 13 through 17, "You call me teacher and master, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, the master and teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you also should do as I did to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is one who is sent greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them." Now, you know, while we've examined the details of Passover, there is certainly more that can be covered in a personal Bible study. And, you know, speaking of details and examining things, we need to examine ourselves before coming to Passover. Make sure that we're in line with Yahweh's word, which is very detailed. So we have to, you know, consider these things. And when we go into the days of unleavened bread, it's a perfect time to continue to, you know, examine ourselves and what we believe and what we're teaching, to make sure that we're, you know, not teaching the leaven of the Pharisees, but we're actually teaching Yahweh's word. And this is the hope. We are gathered together to learn and to go forth with his word and in obedience to him. And may he be glorified and honored by what we do and say in his spirit and in his truth. Hallelujah.